Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back. It's that time of the bye week again. Bye week isn't really a thing, but we're going to go with it. Anyway, it's time for a new episode of Tripping Up, a comedy travel podcast. I'm your host, Nina Clapperton, travel blogger and solo travel expert. If you're new to the show, welcome. Thank you for joining me. And let me tell you a little bit about what we're doing. Tripping Up is a podcast about celebrating travel trip ups and triumphs. It's the one place where you can laugh at the pain of others and get inspired to book a plane ticket, all in one 45-minute episode. This week's guest may not inspire you to buy a plane ticket, but it'll definitely have you searching for a new bike, and maybe some zip ties. Meet R.C. Shaw, a writer, teacher, surfer, and impressive traveler. R.C. began his journey as a surfer/teacher in Halifax, Nova Scotia. That's the Nova Scotia in Canada, for all of our British listeners. He attended the MFA Creative Nonfiction program at King's College, where he worked with nonfiction experts to craft this epic travel tale. Not only was he working full-time and going to school full-time, but he also had two little girls. RC is a testament to the fact that there's always ways to make your dreams come true, whether they're surfing across Nova Scotia, writing a novel, or spending time with your kids. Sometimes it's all three. Grab your wetsuit and let's dive into this week's episode. This is R.C. Shaw on Tripping Up.
Now boarding.
Hi, Ryan. Welcome to Tripping Up. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Nina.
So we're really excited to learn about how and why you travel. Would you mind sharing with us your travel history?
Sure. I love traveling, like everyone who's listening to this podcast probably loves traveling. My history, you know, I traveled as a kid and a teenager with my parents. We did mostly road trips, but once I got through university, I did a pretty big backpacking tour of Europe by myself for 4 months. So that was an eye-opening experience. And that actually gave me the taste for solo travel, which when I've been reflecting on it, I realized that a lot of my traveling has been by myself. So after the Europe trip, it was mostly hitchhiking journeys. And I took a couple big hitchhiking journeys, and I've done a lot of hitchhiking since. And it wasn't until recently when I decided to try more bicycle, camping, surfing travel. But in between, a lot of hitchhiking.
That's incredible. I mean, I've never been brave enough to even consider hitchhiking. So well done. Where did you do most of the hitchhiking? Was it in North America?
Yes. The first time I tried it was actually not in North America. It was in Australia. And I had been in Australia for teacher's college, and I decided to fly up to the very top of Australia and try to hitchhike all the way back down to Sydney. And so that was my first time trying it. But I've done some more in North America since then. And I think I'll probably end up talking about one of those journeys later on.
Okay, perfect. We love it. And since you've had some unique travel experiences, I'm sure you've picked up a weird souvenir over the years.
Yeah, actually that one, probably the weirdest souvenir was a half rack of deer antlers that I liberated from an old decrepit, shed in a field somewhere on the eastern shore of Nova Scotia. And I hemmed and hawed about taking it because it wasn't mine to take, but it looked like this place was pretty much completely abandoned. So I took half the antler rack of antlers down and affixed them to my bicycle and used those as my sort of my headlamp for the rest of the trip. So now I have the half rack of antlers on my riding shed out back now.
Oh, wow. Inside or on the outside?
On the outside, just above the door.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, it's really funny how many people have like an animal souvenir as well. I've never considered animal souvenir parts of souvenirs, I guess. I don't know. But it must have, like, how did you affix it to the bike? Cause you would have had to like tie it or bungee cord it or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, before I got it off the shed, it was nailed in there. So when I was pulling it down, I almost poked my eyes out for one. So then after that, I thought I got to make sure this is safe because it's super sharp. But the key thing I brought on that trip were zip ties. So I zip tied it to the front of my handlebars and got it really tight. So it was just sitting there.
That's a great like secret tip. I've never thought to bring zip ties while traveling, but that's so smart. I'm going to have to start packing them now. I'll look like a bit of a serial killer or something with them in my luggage, but I'm sure I'll be fine.
I mean, everybody says duct tape is number one. That also makes you look a bit like a serial killer. So why not add zip ties, right?
That's true. Just go like full hog into it. Just like have a like little hunting knife ready to go and then just be prepared to answer some questions for some Mounties.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Well, it's been really great learning about kind of your history, but now we want to know your tripping up travel story in a time when things went a little awry.
Okay. So I'll tell you a little bit about this journey that I did that led to the book I wrote. And it happened about 3 years ago, and I live on the eastern shore of Nova Scotia. So my idea was to try to get from my house in Cow Bay, Nova Scotia, near Halifax, all the way to the fortress of Louisbourg, which is on the eastern side of Cape Breton Island, northeastern side. So that's about 600 kilometers. And I wanted to try to do it by bicycle. And I wanted to find all kinds of waves and surf breaks that I hadn't seen along the way. So my plan was to take 3 weeks and go from Cow Bay to Louisbourg via bike. And I found this old trailer on Kijiji that a man had welded together from a kid's bike. And this is a pretty rickety contraption already, but I figured out that it could attach to my commuter bike, which was about 10 years old, and I bought it used. So both pieces of equipment that I was planning to travel 600 kilometers on were already kind of creaky before I left Cow Bay. So that just sets up for the story that comes about nine days in. So I was doing okay. And if you know the Eastern Shore at all, or even Nova Scotia at all, you know that fog is something you have to deal with, but especially on the Eastern Shore.
Especially near Cape Breton too. Cape Breton is notorious for terrible weather.
Exactly. Yeah. And this was in June, July. So usually in June, you can count on some good days, but then the fog usually rolls in, and the fog brings with it salty air and salty air and metal bikes don't agree. And by day 6, 7, 8, I just noticed that there was rust forming in lots of different places on the what I was calling the rig, which is the bicycle and the trailer. So I'm biking along. There's nothing I could really do about it. And I was listening to the creaking and like I was doing previous, I found this spot. It's to pull off the road to check waves. And pretty much the whole day, I hadn't seen any houses because I was in a super rural location, but I came to this place called New Harbor. When I pulled off the road, I was pedaling up the hill and I heard this huge crack and I felt it under me. And I felt all of a sudden the bike became flimsy. It was like, it was a spaghetti noodle, and it was rigid. And then all of a sudden it was gone and the whole frame fell to the ground. And I knew that something had broken on the bicycle, more than just a pop tire or a chain off. And I didn't want to look back at all because I knew this would end my quest. And I thought right away, this is it. There's no way I can go any further. I'll have to hitchhike. That's my backup plan. I looked back at the bike and the thing called a seat stay, which actually connects your frame to the rear wheel, had sheared off. The weld was broken and it was lolling off to the left. And so I just got frustrated. I thought, this is it. At the same time, I noticed the first house that I had seen in a long time, just off to my right, a little white house. And I looked at the house, like, okay, what? Well, this could be helpful, but I'm not sure if anyone lives here because it's in the middle of nowhere and it doesn't look lived in. Then I saw this woman's face appear in the window of the house, and she's got this huge, like late stage dandelion hair and glasses. And she looks at me, we make eye contact, then she totally moves out of the frame. And I'm like, okay, I just scared the life out of her. Here's this ragged looking traveler, and she's just checking in and probably hiding in her cellar now. But I didn't think anything anymore about that. I looked down at my bike, I disconnected it from the trailer, and I had this urge to just basically throw the bike into the ditch because it was done. But she came out of her house and she came up to me and she's like, oh, looks like something's wrong there. And I'm like, yeah, something's really wrong. My frame's completely broken. And she walked towards me. She introduces herself. She's married. She's 80 years old. She's from New Harbor. And she offers me her husband's shed, which is this little shed. I could see it. And she's like, well, she told me this sad story about her husband passing away the year before, but she had left his shed exactly the way he left it. It was incredible.
Like, I literally have goosebumps as you're saying that. Like, it just feels so like hauntingly beautiful. I love it.
I wasn't sure. I knew something special was happening, but I just assumed that this shed would have basically maybe some hammers and maybe some tools, just not enough to, not a welder for one thing. Like,
yeah.
maybe, but I had my zip ties and duct tape, and I realized that they weren't going to help.
Yeah.
So she lets me see this shed, and I walk up to the shed, I open the door, and it's the most incredibly organized, perfect tool shed with every wrench you could ever imagine, multiple hammers, like nuts and bolts of all shapes and sizes, copper wire, pretty much exactly what you might need to resurrect something. And I couldn't believe my luck, but I started trying things, and I come back to my bike, and I get there, and Mary's got her lawn chair out and a jug of water, and she's just going to sit and watch me try to fix this bike. Good entertainment for her.
Oh yeah.
And she's providing commentary, keeping things light. And I'm trying to do the same, although I'm thinking this is impossible. I try to C-clamp first to try to get the seat stay back on, and but it was too flimsy. I tried a couple other things, and then finally I found these things that are called pipe clamps that you can affix a cylinder and cinch it together with a screwdriver. So I took two of them, put them together, cinched the seat stay back on and tightened it. And as soon as I had done that last turn, I knew the frame was right back together and it was going to be fine. And so I foolishly started, dancing around and celebrating and, having a great old time with Mary, thinking this is it. And, counting my chickens before they hatched, because once I reattached the trailer, which was fully loaded, it had my dry bag, my wetsuit, my yellow surfboard on top. I loaded it back onto the frame of the bicycle. And when I did that, I heard another crack.
Oh no. But
this one was a different register. It was a lower crack, and it was the trailer. I looked back at the trailer and the top was still level, but the whole bottom of the trailer had fallen to the ground. Ugh. And it turned out that the actual steel neck of the trailer had sheared off at a rusty point. So it was a second catastrophic frame break in, an hour and a half. And Mary's, she's just sitting there drinking her water, and she's like, oh, looks like you're gonna have to go back into the shed. And I'm like, yeah, it does. But this time I was trying to be a lot more somber about it because, I felt like I jinxed myself. And when I went back to the shed the next time to try to find something to fix the trailer, I got into the shed and there's this little square window and there's a shaft of sunlight coming in. I kind of looked down at my legs and it's like my greasy legs with the hair on them. I'm like, okay, this is strange. And the shed door actually swings closed on its own behind me. And then I'm closed in this room and I sense I know this might sound a little bit supernatural and strange, but I sensed the sort of the spirit of the of Mary's husband there in the room.
Wow.
And I know it was probably more just feeling grateful and thankful that he had kind of left this as his legacy, this perfect laboratory of resurrection, all these tools. And I just thanked him while I was looking around and went back to the bike with a huge spool of copper wire. And I found a little punch hole in the neck of the trailer, wound it. And Mary's like, yep, keep going, give her, you know, take all the copper wire you can handle. I don't need it. And so I just wrapped this thing like crazy. And she's like, oh, give her some Gorilla Grip tape just to seal the deal. So I was going around with Gorilla Grip tape and I got the trailer back together.
And, that's amazing. How did you ever get back into it though? If you've like taped it and wired it together, it sounds like it's kind of like a Rubik's Cube now to try and enter.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, the actual trailer itself was like external to the bike. So I got on the bicycle itself, but the trailer was pulling behind. So
okay.
I just brought it back together. And when I got it hooked up and back on, I did a couple figure eights because Mary was kind of like, well, what does it look like when you ride this thing? And you know, it was way squeakier and super Frankenstein, but I knew that it was going to actually hold and it held for the next 2 weeks without another
wow.
break.
You were definitely yeah. like, I don't know, I'm not like a ghosty person, but it definitely sounds like something was looking out for you there.
That's what, you know, I chose to believe it. And actually when one thing I found when I travel solo is, and if you've done it, you have a lot of time to think and a lot of time to be by yourself and kind of entertain all these wild imaginative ideas. And I didn't shoot things down. I was kind of trying to listen to and watch for signs. And that's, yeah I agree. It kind of felt like a sign.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the kind of the nice thing about solo travel is like, that's mostly what I do as well. And you get very reflective. You get kind of mindful about everything that's happening. And I'm sure even more so when it's like I do solo travel, usually a little bit less isolated, I'd say, than like biking along that coast. Cause Nova Scotia has some desolate areas where you're just kind of you, trees, and like, I don't know, a moose somewhere hidden in the forest. And you're just hoping you don't meet the moose.
It's true.
I did want to ask you as well, because I know that you were surfing along there, and I actually did my undergrad at Dalhousie in Halifax, and I put my feet in that ocean one time, and I never made that mistake again. So how did you keep getting back into it? Because the Atlantic is cold.
Yeah, the North Atlantic is definitely cold, and it's a cold water surfing spot. So the key is wetsuit, what we say, like rubber, basically, the thicker the rubber, the better. And I had a wetsuit and boots and gloves with me. But since it was June, it wasn't as cold as it gets. You know, the coldest it gets is 0 degrees, sometimes even -1 in and around February, March. And we're all surfing through that. If you're into it, you've got the thick boots and gloves and the suit with the hood. And so, yeah, it's cold water, but if you have the right wetsuit, you're okay.
I mean, you say that, but like I went cave diving in New Zealand and they gave us like the fancy wetsuits and I was still pretty sure I was going to die of hypothermia.
I guess the X factor is like if you can handle cold water, that you know, just if you're born that way, maybe, I don't know.
And I'm sure there's like some I'm sure there's some adrenaline to it too, with kind of, you know what's coming, and so it's worth it almost. Like I didn't know what was going to happen when I went into this cave. Luckily I saw some glowworms, so it made it worth it. But like until we saw them, I was really regretting everything I had chosen to do in my life.
Well, I mean, going like scuba diving?
No. So it was a like underwater river rafting cave diving thing in Waitomo Bay. So they're really famous for it because there are so many like the like little blue glowworms on the top of the ceiling, but you have to get quite a ways through. So you're like jumping off a waterfall backwards. You're like floating in a tube in complete darkness. Like you can't see your own hand in front of you. You're holding on to someone's foot to like, or whatever is ahead of you just to like keep going in a line. But like, you don't know what's beneath you, what's beside you, what's above you. And then all of a sudden there's like a million little blue glowworms that just appear in this one cavern, and it's beautiful, but the hour to get there is so cold. And like, especially when they make you do that first jump in the water to like get the water in the wetsuit to start warming up to body temperature. Yes. I nearly bailed at that point. I was just like, oh my God, this is.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh, this is so cold.
Oh, yeah. That's the shocking part, is that when you first get in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that actually does kind of lead me into my travel story.
Awesome.
It's not about surfing. I have surfed before. I'm not good at it. So, but it's more to do with like cold water. And when I was kind of thinking about your book, and I mean, yeah, I'm still baffled that you can surf in Nova Scotia. I have a couple of friends who did in uni, and it always sounded insane to me. but especially like the newfies who would try and like surf up an iceberg alley. And I was like, they're literal icebergs. Don't be surfing there. What are you doing? but anyway, so this is also another New Zealand story. I spent a year living in New Zealand, just kind of living my life solo traveling. And I was doing a bus tour, and one of the stops was Kaikoura, which is really famous for their aquatic life. They have like sperm whales, every kind of whale. I don't know all the kinds of whales,
yeah.
Porpoises. And then they have the blue-nosed dolphin, which are some of the smallest dolphins in the world. And they're absolutely adorable. And they have this really great eco opportunity to go swim with them, but in the wild. So you just get you don't know if you'll actually see any, you have no guarantee. And I signed up, I spent so much of my money on that trip in New Zealand, but I spent a ton. And you get up at like 3 or 4 in the morning, you have to go out before the sun's even risen. Again, they pack you into the like giant wetsuits. You get like a fleece underneath, you get the like jacket on top, like a bolero. And I could barely move my arms and legs properly while we were trying to like get through all of this. Wow. But eventually they put you on this little motorboat. And I think there were about maybe 10, 12 of us max. And it's really nice because like they do the whole spiel of like, you might not see dolphins, but we're pretty sure you're going to see dolphins. So of course, like you go in with such high expectations. They drive you out, and then there's like 3 different companies doing it near the same time. So they don't go too close to each other, but they tell each other about what's happening. And so all of a sudden, like the radio crackles to life, and it's like, there was a sighting, there was a sighting. And our boat was the closest, which meant that we got to go first, which is so cool. So suddenly you're like, you get like the snorkel goggles and everything that have been rubbed with soap. So they taste horrible. Like when you put that snorkel in your mouth, and then you're just kind of rolling yourself off the back of this boat into what I believe is the coldest waters in the world, even worse than the Atlantic. Cause it was, I mean, at that point it was 5 AM. The sun still hadn't risen. You're in the middle of the open ocean and it's absolutely freezing. And for that first minute, you're kind of like, you swirl a little bit. And my first sight, instead of a dolphin, like I expected, was a seal. And I was really surprised because to my knowledge, you're not supposed to hang out with seals. Seals aren't supposed to hang out with dolphins. And this was not quite mature. It was one of the New Zealand fur seals, which we'd been repeatedly told on a hike through Kaikoura Peninsula the day before, not to get close to you because they will bite you. Oh. And suddenly I am like a foot away from this brown fur seal that thankfully, like he kind of looked at me at the corner of his eye and then swirled off. And it was like, for a few seconds, I thought it was hallucination. I was like, okay, was that really there? What just happened? Like, I know my life shouldn't have flashed before my eyes, but I was like, maybe it should have because I don't know what could happen with this little thing. I watch a lot of Shark Week. So like, they do look pretty big and chunky. So like maybe they draw in sharks. My sister kept like, my little sister is terrified of travel. So she kept calling me to tell me, don't go in the ocean because sharks are going to get you. So of course I'm like, damn it. I'm right next to shark bait. This is the end of the world. And then in the next moment, I'm getting kicked in the face by a flipper from someone else. And that kind of brings me back. I mean, not a lovely feeling, but you're kind of, the shock of the water and the fin to the face really wake you up. And then I turned around and suddenly there was this pod of dolphins right there. So there were, I don't know, at least a dozen that kept coming and going. And there was even a little baby, which was, I never hoped to see a baby dolphin in my life because this is already the tiniest dolphin. And suddenly there's a tinier, tiny dolphin just like right beside you. And dolphins are really playful. So if you make, like we were all making the weirdest, it sounded like foghorn noises because they're attracted to sound. Some people were like singing weird songs, but like we have the snorkel in. So you're singing like row, row, row your boat, but you can't enunciate anything. So never, like occasionally I would come up just because I was entertained by like the sheer chaos of our little group kicking in a circle and like trying to imitate Dory from Finding Nemo, making her whale noises. but it's also really cool because if you dive down and swirl, like spin around, they'll spin with you and they'll kind of follow you in this little like underwater whirlwind. And I mean, it was a beautiful moment. I did have to, when we jumped out of the water, I was really excited. My hands were so cold, like you don't get gloves properly because like you need to be careful about not touching them because you don't want to interact. And with gloves, you can't always tell. But so we get back on the boat and like, I never thought I'd be relieved to have someone shove a boiling hot hose down the front of a wetsuit, but oh my God, that was beautiful. Definitely. And like, that was all before 8 a.m. in the morning. And like the rest of that day was just downhill from there. Cause that was, I mean, both brilliant and like terrifying.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, like that actually ties our stories together really well because the hot hose down the wetsuit is like every surfer's dream, every cold water surfer's dream actually.
Yeah. Well, and I'd never, like, I knew you could get hot. I didn't know you could get that hot. And like, there was like steam rising off of all of us. And like, and you don't want to peel up the wetsuit too fast. And we still had to go to a second spot. And oh my God, it was the funniest thing. Like having like a bunch of girls, like just kind of like stealing hoses from each other on the back of a boat, which I'm sure is like some really weird, wet and wild thing. I don't know. That could be a video, but it was so funny. We were all just like throwing hoses at each other for a good 15 minutes.
And you're all feeling so good because you got to swim with dolphins, which is wicked.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. And I mean, I would do it again in a heartbeat. I would get some thermal layers ready for the way back though, because that would have helped a lot later. I think it's really cool that, I mean, those kind of ocean activities exist anywhere in the world. And the same with surfing. Like, I think it's really amazing that we have this connection to the water, and I don't swim very well, so I don't like always feel comfortable in it. But like when you do feel comfortable, it's so freeing.
Yeah, I agree. That's really what surfing is for me.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, we both shared some tripping up stories now. So we've kind of gotten into some positives, but here at Tripping Up, we try to end on a travel positive or a travel triumph to remind people that even when things get dark and dismal and really hinky, that there's always a bright spot and there's always a reason to travel. So if you wouldn't mind sharing your travel triumph with us.
Sure. Yeah. That's a great setup, because I was thinking of the first hitchhiking journey that I tried in North America, which happened about, I think, 15 years ago. And I had decided to check out the East Coast. I'm not from the East Coast, but this trip actually led me to move here. And
I'm surprised, because you do a brilliant Cape Breton accent when you were imitating Mary. So like, I thought you were born somewhere in the East Coast, because only they can really get that twang.
I've been working hard at it for the last 16 or 17 years. And now our daughters, who are born and raised in Cow Bay, so that we get to kind of watch them grow up stone's throw from the ocean. So we're considering ourselves East Coasters now, especially the girls. Course.
I think most East Coasters are transplants anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, the trip I did, was there weren't many transplants, because I was hitchhiking. So I went from St. John's. My goal was, I had 5 weeks to get from St. John's to Halifax. Wow. Without, and my goal was really not to take any form of travel other than hitchhiking. And the beautiful thing about hitchhiking that I realized and was that, you know, I started in the rain, and I thought I actually almost bailed out the very first day, leaving St. John's in a downpour. And there was like 2 hours without getting a ride. And I thought, this is just foolish, because I got my tent and everything in it, and I'm trying to make this work by camping. And it's obviously a fool's errand, right? Yeah. But I did, I finally did get picked up, and that's set, like, it was like a domino that set in motion all these amazing rides I had from these people that I met in Newfoundland. And I realized that I think hitchhiking, which is now much more of an endangered species than it was before everything started going down in March, but hitchhiking is the ultimate trust contract between you as the person who's hitchhiking, but even more from the person who pulls over to pick you up. Because to pull over to pick someone up, a stranger up, is to really risk everything. You know, you don't have to stop. It's way, way, way easier to drive by. But by that person stopping and picking me up, I always felt it was this beautiful, this form of trust between two people who didn't know each other. So that's what got me thinking more about hitchhiking and why I kind of miss it. I don't think I'm going to hitchhike anymore. There comes a time when you start to realize that it's maybe just you're growing out of it.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was the ultimate way to get a conversation with a stranger and put your trust in fate, because oftentimes the hitch would lead to something that you didn't plan at all. So if you're a planner, you won't like hitchhiking. But if you really like to be open to brand new experiences and say yes to most things, then hitchhiking is such a great way to get an adventure.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, as a woman, I often don't consider it. I was wondering, so if you have any tips for then hitchhikers, maybe if people go in, is it harder if you go in pairs, or some tips for newbies out there?
Sure. Yeah. The main tips I have would be, and I haven't actually hitched with a group or a pair, but I think that's a good idea. You kind of limit yourself though, if the person driving by doesn't have enough room, especially if you have gear. So I've never hitchhiked with a surfboard, only once actually. But the first thing is see if you can get out in the morning.
Okay.
Don't be hitchhiking late afternoon into the evening. It's never good when the sun's going down. So try to do your actual traveling in the morning. Always find a good spot where the driver can see you from a long distance off. That gives them time to think about it. And then by the time they actually pass you, maybe they're up for stopping and picking you up. It doesn't hurt to smile as well.
Yes.
That's what I try to do. And the other thing I found is I'd never use a sign. You know, some people use a sign.
Yeah.
I kind of find sign maybe signaling something that, you know, if, you know, like, I'm going to BC, but you're in Quebec. Well, the person thinks, oh, geez, this is going to be a really long, a long drive. So I would never use a sign. But the other thing is really the last thing I wanted to say about making hitchhiking work is I had this thing where it's probably not good advice, but try not to refuse a ride. So do if someone pulls over, go up before I get into the car, I just have a quick look to see if I could trust it. But it was already a leap of faith. So I felt if I turned down a ride, I was kind of this bad luck. But again, that's not advice. That's just how I did it.
That's fair. And I mean, like maybe worst case too, if you already have the zip ties and duct tape and your hunting knife, you can always be like, oh, well, I'm a murderer too. So we can't murder each other.
Yeah, you get along. And actually the neat thing is that here's one thing. If someone says, check in my glove box, don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I made the mistake once, and there was a really strange, actually a strange photograph in there that was quite shocking. Oh, and but I'll save that for another day.
Yeah, maybe for a more blue version of the podcast then.
Yeah.
That's been amazing, Ryan. We've really loved having you on the podcast. Thank you for all of your amazing tripping up stories, and for the hitchhiking tips. It's a great bonus for our listeners.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Nina. I really appreciated it.
Attention passengers, we've now reached our destination. We hope you enjoyed the flight and have a nice day.
I'm still shivering thinking about that Atlantic water. I can't imagine surfing in that and then hopping on a half-broken duct tape bicycle and continuing on your way. RC is made of some thicker stuff than I am. RC really went all in with the adventure in his adventure travels. Check out his debut travel book, Lewisburg or Bust, A Surfer's Wild Ride Down Nova Scotia's Drown Coast. Unlike modern tales of cycle travel with spandex and expensive kit, RC traveled the road like an adventurer of old. With just a map and a copy of Don Quixote to guide him, he set forth to cycle and surf the Lewisburg coast. He describes it best. No gadgets, no safety net, just the restless pulse of the Atlantic Ocean as it rips and tears at the clay headlands of the eastern shore. Lewisburg or Bust is like Don Quixote with a surfboard. It's equal parts dream adventure and nightmare travel trip up, all thrown together. Throughout reading it, you'll feel RC's deep love for the Nova Scotian coast, including a shockingly accurate Cape Breton accent, even in the written form. You'll find a link to buy the book in the show notes. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to Tripping Up wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us reach new people to share these incredible trips and triumphs. See you in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.